Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Michael and the Here and There podcast of the Germanic American Institute. Deutsche Tage is officially over and we are returning back to our what I would call classic podcast format. With me in our virtual studio, we have Claudia as well as Catherine and a special guest of today. Please do enjoy. This is the podcast of the Germanic American Institute.
Welcome.
Willkommen.
Where Germanic-speaking European countries...
Germany.
Deutschland.
Austria.
Österreich.
Switzerland.
Schweiz.
Blend with the Midwestern United States.
Hallo.
Servus.
Grüezi.
We are here and there, and we invite you to come along on the journey.
Claudia can introduce our guest today.
Yeah, we have a very special guest, and those of you who've been at the GAI house over the years have seen him help with events and be here for Samstagsschule and just be an all-around fantastic helper. And all of that at 9 years old. And his name is Kaspar, and he's the son, actually one of the sons of Katrin, who is also on this podcast. And he has just been a fixture here in the house ever since he could probably crawl and talk. So we thought, you know, what a great opportunity for us to bring him on the podcast and ask him a couple of questions about the things that he does here as a child at the GAI. Hello, Kaspar.
Hello.
Kaspar, how are you? Thanks actually for coming on today, sitting right next to mom and giving your first official interview. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm, you're welcome.
So one of the things I suppose that is really important as we go through summer for all the parents who are listening to us, we do have the GAI summer camp. And you are not just a fixture at the house, but also a fixture in the summer camp. How long have you been at summer camp? How many years?
I think 4 years, so I started when I was six.
What keeps you coming back? What do you like about summer camp?
It's fun. I like eating snack and speaking German and probably learning new words here and there every day.
Learning new words here and there. What's your favorite word?
I have lots.
And which one comes to mind right away? What's the favorite one?
Kompaktladen.
Come who?
Kompaktladen.
Kompaktladen?
Ah.
Okay.
Kompaktladen.
Good word.
What for those who are now completely just pulling up the big question mark, what is that?
What is it?
Oh, what are they called? They're these little... digger thingies.
Bobcats.
See, and that's how things usually go when your kids come out of the summer camp. They can educate you, just as you just witnessed with Katrin and Kaspar. And so basically, words obviously are your favorite. You're learning new words and so forth. But in terms of activities, what do you get to do at summer camp? What do you like to do there?
Probably playing games, doing the main subjects of summer camp. Yeah.
What are those? What are the main subjects?
What's the subject this week?
This subject is photography camp.
Oh, cool. What does that look like? You get a camera and you just go out and go wild? Or what do you do?
It's a camera where I can't see the picture and I can't delete it if it doesn't turn out good. And we can only take 27 pictures, and every day we have a limit of taking pictures, and the pictures are a specific thing.
So you take pictures of specific things every day this week with your camera of 20 shots. So this is basically a film camera. You don't get to really see the outcome right away. So you got to be really deliberate. You really got to think about the thing that you want to shoot, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think your best picture was?
So far, probably it was today, this picture of a red car, old car.
So to add a little bit of background, right? So we purposely pick different themes for the weeks of summer camp to give the kids an opportunity not just to converse and do things in German, but to learn about different topics. So this week is photography camp. Next week we're doing a STEM or in German mint camp. Later on in the summer we're doing robotics, we're doing cooking, we're doing fairy tales. So each week has a very different theme. And the kids get to participate in the activities and in the program. And as Kaspar says, learn words every day that have to do with the theme.
What theme would you like to have that you haven't had yet?
It's probably swimming camp.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah,
I know you guys like to swim. Yep. It's hard because we don't have a pool.
There's a big donation request. The GI needs a pool. Let's go, people. Step it up. We need to get swimming lessons to the GI. That's definitely also very, very good skill to have. Kaspar, are you also attending Samstagsschule?
Yes.
Yeah? What's that like?
We learn stuff about German, like summer camp, but every day is like sometimes the same topic, sometimes a different topic. And yeah.
And, you know, I have to add, though, Kaspar is not just attending summer camp. It's because Kaspar is so fantastic. He's actually been promoted to assistant teacher. He helps with summer camp. He helps with summer camp, but he helps with Samstagsschule. So he helps the other children. He's a teaching assistant. So he does a fantastic job.
Okay, tell me, what do you get to do as the teacher helper?
I sometimes get stuff. I also sometimes do the work that they're doing, but I hand papers out.
Some of the kids sometimes that maybe don't know what to do, right?
Sometimes.
Mm-hmm. So you want to become a teacher when you grow up?
Nah.
Fair enough. Well, Kaspar, thank you so much for joining us today. We will repeat this again. Maybe next year or sooner.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Well, thank you so much, Kaspar.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Bye.
And dash, off he goes. Took about 2 seconds to disappear from the couch. Katrin, what a wonderful young man.
I agree. I'm possibly biased, though.
Yeah. Well, of course. Let's segue from summer camp to summer traditions. In the U.S., particularly here in Minnesota, St. Paul, and Minneapolis, the summer traditions would probably be to go to the cabin. That's, I think, quite a tradition.
Yep, cabin culture. Yep.
What do we have? Do we have something similar in Germany, Austria, Switzerland? What's the summer culture?
And we don't have so many cabins, but we go to the Baggersee, or in southern Germany, we go to the Black Forest or something, to the lakes there. But yeah,
people, I think we
cabins, you know, you can't afford it.
I think we need to quickly translate Baggersee.
Oh, it's an artificial lake, right? Tends to be an artificial lake that was maybe created. As part of a river or Katrin, I can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As part of a gravel pit, like a former gravel pit.
There you go. Thank you. And then I guess the other really big German and Austrian and in general European tradition is go on vacation, right? I mean, people actually do go on vacation for several weeks somewhere to the ocean.
Or the mountains,
yeah.
What's the, since we're at that topic, just a quick sidestep, if you will, what's the vacation standards in Germany?
What do you mean?
In terms of how many weeks do you get?
Six weeks paid vacation in the throughout the year.
I think it's five in Austria, as far as I remember.
So for about 3 weeks in the summer, often.
Yeah. What else do we have on traditions in Austria? It's about the same idea. We spend a lot of time, if you are from Vienna, you spend a lot of time at the Donauinsel, which is the Danube Island. It's an artificial mm-hmm. island that was created for the express purpose of giving Viennese, if you will, a break in nature and just allowing them to just, you know, hang loose a little bit and enjoy an artificial construct, but it's actually it's been there for decades. Looks like it's always been there at that point. Cabins, we also few and far between. We do have what we call Schrebergärten. Those are tiny little yards where people have tiny little houses. Basically, we practiced minimalism before minimalism was cool, in the smallest of structures, and that's where people who had the opportunity just grew their own little tomatoes and whatnot, and then just took them back home. So it became kind of this, our version of a cabin, just on a much smaller footprint.
Well, because usually you can't spend the night there, right? The little sheds on there. Yeah, we have Schrebergarten in Germany too. And it's actually, you know, usually big areas, are set aside at the edge of a city for people to have a small garden or a small yard, because they live in high rises or they don't have a spot to have a yard by their house. Katrin, I assume that's the same in Northern Germany?
Exact same. Yeah, we say Schrebergärten or Kleingärten.
Kleingärten, yeah.
It's very interesting because when I was younger or little, really, it was more of a thing that, you know, it was a little old fashioned, I would say. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of community events really going on, and it had a little bit of a smell of extreme squareness to it. You know, no Kleingarten was complete without a garden gnome, and the garden gnome is kind of the symbol of German squareness, or was back then. And it's been going through a revival in the last decade or so, where it's actually become hip again to own a little piece of land. And of course in Germany, 70% of the population lives in apartments and 30% lives in their own house. So for a lot of people that are living in their apartment, that's a way of growing their own stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Have a, you know, as we say, ein Plätzchen im Grünen, a little place in outside of the city. And and younger and younger people are doing this as well. As you said, less to grow their own vegetables or whatever, but more to kind of have a hangout place to get away from living in the city. Yep.
And I actually have heard lately that those who've had their little yards, if you will, for a longer period of time and had the opportunity to buy a bigger one, they have somehow managed to talk the Viennese government, the city government, into letting them build actual structures. So for instance, my uncle tore down his little shed and built an actual two-story small home on there, and he's just predominantly hanging out there now, because Vienna in the summer, it's getting pretty warm, almost uncomfortably warm. Air conditioning is not something we readily see in Austria, and in Germany also, not exactly readily available. Mm-hmm. And with that, people just try to escape the heat of the city.
So speaking of escaping the heat, right, there's a big tradition in Germany, in addition to going to swim at lakes, which is a lot harder to find lakes to swim in compared to Minnesota. Every town, large and small, has what's called a Freibad, or a public pool. And those tend to be the places where you flock to during the week or even on weekends. And it's not comparable to the public pools I've seen here, where you basically just have a swim area and maybe a children's area. There are large areas of lawn around these public pools, and there's concessions, and there's, you know, there's other activities, and people literally go and spend the whole day there, and it's called Freibad. And that is definitely something where many summers days are spent.
It's cheap. You can get, you know, like a season ticket or something like that. And it's really the true equalizer, because you have everything from the blue collar family to the university students. People don't really have so many pools privately. So a lot of people go there to cool off, jump in the water. And then especially if you're in high school or university, you really hang out there. It has a big social function as well. And they're generally supported by the city. The city runs them, the city finances them. And actually of all swimming pools in Germany, about 50% are outside, which means they are open, I don't know, it's May 15th or something. It's like, of course it's Germany, it has a specific date on which they always open every year. And then they go through August. And a very important institution in the Freibad is the so-called kiosk. And at the kiosk, you can get all the junk food your heart desires. So French fries or anything in the Haribo product line. But you can get a little paper bag and you say, oh, I would like a bunte Tüte, a bag of colors for, I don't know, €1 or something. And then they throw in anything they can get in there for €1. Yeah, and they have beer, of course, and maybe sometimes wine, not sure, and water and pop and all those things.
And bratwurst usually and French fries and it's, and as you said, it is a huge social thing where you kind of have to be in the cool kids to be in the cool kids part of the lawn. And, you know, you kind of, you know, it's very cliquish, just like, you know, any other social functions that you do when you're in high school. But yeah, it's a great summer tradition. And as Katrin says, it's a great equalizer because it's, you know, it's not very expensive and you can spend a day at the pool.
And really it's one of the last resorts or one of the last areas where all layers of society come together. Yeah. The other one being the sport clubs, of course. But yeah, you have lawn, lots and lots of lawn around there where you can put down your towel and then you can reside and preside over your group possibly. There's ice cream, of course. It's not so much that there are games or any organized stuff going on, although after hours, sometimes the swim team trains there or the water polo team or things like that.
Yeah, the thing that I remember from particularly Vienna again is the Stadtbad, so the city bath in a verbatim translation, a ginormous area. Just imagine, it's really hard to draw a size comparison, but I would say 10, 15 football fields at minimum.
Oh yeah.
With several pools, one of which being a wave pool, the other one a dive pool with the 10-meter tower, and then a pool for kids where the water basically is knee high and so forth. And yes, tons of lawn, but also several volleyball courts, several small soccer fields. And people just show up, hang out, basically have a pickup game and to join games that are already in process or in progress. And I think the status symbol at that level would be to actually have a seasonal locker, perhaps even step it up and have a seasonal changing room. And those are so hard fought over that they actually are being passed down the family tradition, the family line. So rather than giving them up, because evidently they are just really hard to come by, they just hand them off to a son or daughter to be basically kept in the family. So that's how we do in Vienna, if you will. And what's interesting is to the degree of what Katrin just spoke about is the social fabric really blends there, because when you really think about it, once you're in your swimming trunks, you're really indistinguishable from the next person in the swimming trunks. So whatever your social status is really does not necessarily apply, because everybody just looks the same and everybody treats each other pretty much the same. Of course, there's the occasional person that is perhaps a little questionable in their conduct, but those are pretty quickly dealt with in a very Viennese sort of sarcastic fashion. And they know that this is, you know, okay, maybe I shouldn't conduct myself like that. But it's super peaceful, very just family oriented, really an interesting thing that I actually have not seen in that fashion in the US at all.
No, and one way to rise to the top of the hierarchy is when you're a teenager, is to be able to jump off the 10-meter tower. That was one of the coolness factors, right? And if you are, you know, one of the cool kids, you do jump off the 10-meter tower when that is open. That's only opened where I came from on occasion because lifeguard has to supervise that when people randomly jump off 10 meter towers into the water. But that's definitely a way to climb the social ladder.
It's also one of the first jobs that kids have when they turn 16 is being a lifeguard. So for instance, that was my introduction to the working world. My first job was being a lifeguard.
Yep.
Thankfully.
The free or the outside pool culture, I mean, it goes way, way, way back. And the open air pool that we have, my grandfather already took my father there. So, you know, it really hasn't changed much. I mean, they, you know, refresh the paint every once in a while, but generally speaking, it's still the same. And of course, we know that going back in the Roman and Greek cultures, bathhouses were a big thing. But then once the church swept in, they declared the baths to be immoral because not just bathing was going on there. And especially at the end of the Middle Ages, a lot of baths were actually shut down. And then just when Enlightenment or Renaissance happened, that's when people already or finally saw that, ooh, maybe this is healthy. Maybe it's good to wash yourself with water and not just with powder and perfume. And that's really when the bath culture started living up again.
I suppose, I mean, yes, longstanding, hundreds, actually thousands of years of tradition behind that, just really brought up to contemporary levels, if you will. Whereas one of the things I think that would catch most Americans off guard is that topless in public bath, public pool areas is actually condoned. It is not necessarily that, oh, you have to be, but it is a choice that is readily available.
Yeah, very much so. And also people a lot of times just change out in the open. You know, they don't necessarily go into the changing rooms or something. And again, everybody has seen everything before. It's just not a big thing. And yeah, people don't even really look that way. Then it just, well, obviously you have a wet swimsuit on, you have to take it off because otherwise, you know, you got to get a bladder infection or something worse, kidneys. Mm-hmm. And there's got to be a draft somewhere, clearly. And they just do it.
I mean, which is really the interesting epiphany because actually really nobody cares. And this applies, again, to the essentially readily publicly accessible areas of public pools. But of course, there is the next level up, so to speak, where it's completely without clothing altogether. Again, nobody cares. And that to me, that level of perceived freedom, whether you actually participate or not, but the level of perceived freedom to actually do what you want in the manner in which you want to do it without anybody else looking at you judgmentally, is also quite interesting from that perspective.
Absolutely. And the conversations that I sometimes have here about, you know, nudist beaches or something, which is so common in Germany, you have people of all ages there, truly of all ages, from the little baby to the, what is it, octogenarian, I think they're called.
Something like that.
And nobody cares. And then a lot of times when Americans ask me about that, because it's a frequently asked question, they're a little bit like, well, who wants to see, you know, like really old people or people that are older than 20 when they're naked? And it's like, well, you're not there to show off your body. You're there to enjoy the sun, to enjoy the water. And nobody cares what you look like. It's fine. You know, nobody is there. It's not some sort of peep show situation.
Yeah, it's really not a contest, which is quite interesting. Again, like you said, yes, it's a frequently asked question from a cultural perspective, particularly as we go towards summer. A lot of my students actually ask, is this actually true? Does this exist? It's like, yeah, it does. But to be honest, until you bring it up, it actually hasn't even occurred to me that this is something perhaps out of the ordinary. Just to leave this sitting there, so to speak, in case that we ever get to travel again and we ever get to go back to Europe and enjoy some of the European summer traditions, if you are going to experience, which I certainly suggest, such a scenario where you go to a public spa, if you will, which is what I would want to call them, don't be surprised if somebody just shows up in a manner that you wouldn't expect.
Well, and yeah, public spas are also... We do have public spas, right? Like in Baden-Baden, those are called Heilbäder, which then is again something different than just a public pool. So there are very many different kinds of whether there's healing. And I was just actually the other day when I when it was hot and we had a little pool with water and I was just walking around in it, I was thinking about the Kneipe culture, Kneiping.
What is that?
So there, and I think the guy was actually a doctor or a holistic medicine person. He figured out that it's actually healthy for people to wade in maybe like calf deep cold water. And his name was Kneipe. And so in some towns or villages with where often along the edge of a forest where you have a creek running, you will find some concrete small wading pools where, you know, and they're maybe, I don't know, 20 feet long with a rail in the middle. And you basically just hold on to the rail and you walk in circles. And the water that runs through there is often the water from the creek, which means it's very cold and it's kind of calf deep. And you just walk in there and you walk through there. And it's called Kneipe therapy, Kneiping. And I used to do that with my grandma all the time. And it just occurred to me when I was doing that the other day when it was really hot, when we have a little kiddie pool in the yard and I'm walking in cold water and I'm like, it is actually very nice and very refreshing. So there's a lot of water culture and doing things in water for different health purposes that that is still being done in Germany.
I did not know that.
Yeah, Katrin's laughing, so she's recognizing it.
Yes, I am. And I'm just thinking again, at some point, we all turn into our parents or grandparents. So,
well, I can't help it because my grandma took me when I was a little kid all the time.
Oh, and so, that was very popular in Northern Germany as well.
Yeah. Well, this was in Hessen, actually close to Kassel, so not too far away from where you grew up.
Yeah. Also, the whole sauna situation, right? People, of course, also do not wear clothes going to a sauna, and you are not allowed to wear clothes because it's considered unhygienic. So, yeah, very much be prepared to take off everything when you're going to a sauna. But again, nobody cares, nobody looks. It's just how it is.
It is quite a quantum shift for most Americans to recognize that. But let me actually, since you mentioned the Kneipe therapy, let me throw something Viennese at you guys and see if you recognize what I'm talking about. Heuriger.
Yep.
Yes.
We've actually Heuriger here at the GAE, at the GEI.
And there I thought I'm going to be cool for a second. Well, just for the listening audience, let me fill you in what a Heuriger is. Heuriger is essentially a vineyard operation that is usually on the outskirts of a bigger city and kind of earmarked, if you will, as a tourist destination, although plenty of locals go there as well. And one such area is on the northeastern end of Vienna, which is called Grinzing. It's a small little subdivision. And Heuriger, essentially that vineyard operation, is really carved into the mountain in which they have the little vineyard at. So the wine that you get is literally from the backyard in which you sit in to drink and eat. It's one of the favorite pastimes when you're not out at the pool, when you're not leaving the city. You have an opportunity to just dash out there, get a glass of white wine that is stretched with sparkling water, which we then call the Spritzer. So basically the infused, if you will. And then you just load up on just incredible food from the buffet and you just hang out and you talk with just about everyone. It's sure you come with your party there and you hang out with them, but it's quite mesmerizing how quickly a conversation with everybody else there actually unfolds. Now, with social distancing, probably a little more challenging, but I've heard that Vienna is slowly opening up, and this might actually really be an opportunity again going towards mid-late summer. So,
yeah. Yep. So, I mean, that, you know, ties into that whole Biergarten culture, where you just go out, you're eating and drinking outside, and Biergarten, even though, you know, it has the word beer in it, people often drink. We call it Schorle. But we call it Schorle and can be made with wine or with juice and sparkling water. And, or we also even drink Radler, which is a beer with a 7-Up basically. And yeah, so, cause you can drink a lot more, it's still refreshing. It doesn't get you drunk. And yeah, that's a huge thing in Germany as well. Whether you drink wine or beer, it's just the sitting outside, socializing, having something to drink and eat.
Do we have anything particular for Northern Germany in terms of summer tradition? Anything that stands out that is perhaps uncommon?
I don't know. I mean, we tend to go to the coast on the weekends, you know, and we tend to go and enjoy the Watt when the water goes away. I don't know that there are particular summer traditions necessarily besides enjoying the sea, really. But yeah, I mean, we make a lot of Rote Grütze, which is a dessert made out of fruit and tapioca. But other than that, I don't know. I don't think it's so different from everywhere else in Germany. Of course, every state gets 6 weeks of summer vacation. So the schools get 6 weeks of summer vacation and they're all staggered. It's unlike in France where the whole of France shuts down in the month of August. And Bavaria is always last with their vacation.
In Baden-Württemberg.
Yeah. And so, yeah, people just flock kind of everywhere. You know, some people go further, maybe to Spain or Italy. Some people go up north, Sweden, Scandinavia, very popular. And some people stay in the country. But most people, I would say, go somewhere. I would like to throw in, just as a closing commentary here, that we don't have 5 or 6 weeks of vacation because German employers are so very, very kind and, you know, want their employees to just have a good time. I mean, work life is just as tough as it is here. But it is very clear that employees are just way more productive if they can take off some time in between. And that is also why employers actually encourage that. Because it makes you a better worker afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, there is a ton of research out there that relates to A, that, B, of course, the reduction of stress, and also the 35-hour work week, or as it is in some parts or some professions, the 30 hours, or the Finnish way, which I think now is going down to, what is it, 28 hours a week or something like that. I think that's the new proposition. Certainly, I think a topic that we could address in the future. Moving on, singing. We've done one sing-along, but there is a much bigger sing-along going on every single year, with the exception, of course, this year, because this year, 2020, changes everything. But it started originally in 1956 in the beautiful, beautiful city of Lugano in Switzerland. And the event we are talking about is the Eurovision Song Contest. It's no longer just a Eurovision. It's actually almost a global vision with participants from just about every country around the world. And that really is the intent, to have participants from countries representing their country and singing a tune, and somebody shall walk away the winner. That's the longest standing, I think, annual singing competition that's broadcast. Since 1956. I think that's their claim to fame, if you will. I would almost want to argue that the Eurovision Song Contest gave birth to the idea of The Voice, which is now this, I would say, global spectacle as well, that has produced incredible talents in the music industry. And when we're looking through essentially the history of the Eurovision Song Contest, there's at least one name that I would want to say that you recall, and it's coming out of 1974, singing Waterloo, ABBA, Four Swedes.
So this whole European song contest, people will probably go, yeah, whatever, right? I mean, significance is, in 1956, Europe was still very, very fragmented and all over the place. And this was a way to kind of bring Europe together after the war, in a friendly competition, yeah, other than soccer, which isn't always so friendly, and you know, in a way where artistic talent could get there, and every country, you know, gets to send somebody, and every country gets to vote, except they don't get to vote for their own person. So it was just a different ways and means of building community within the European community. And now it's actually gone, you know, started in 1956. And the reason actually we're talking about it today is because it's being canceled this year for the first time ever. And some of you may actually also be aware that there's a current movie coming out about it. So there is something that's being talked about here in the US with Will Ferrell, and I have to take a look at what the film is being called. But it's a big production, and there's many more countries currently that participate than initially. And, you know, countries like Australia even participate in Israel because they're not really part of the European Union. But it's just a very fun pan-European event with friendly competition. Yeah. So if anybody is interested, so there's actually a movie out with Will Ferrell right now. It's called Eurovision Song Contest, The Story of Fire Saga. And it chronicles somebody that are two small pop town, two small town singers chase their pop star dreams at a global music competition. And I believe they're supposed to be like from Iceland or something. So it's, check it out. It's probably fun. But interestingly enough, our German-speaking countries, Switzerland, Austria, and Germany, each have won the competition twice. So only the country who has actually won it the most often is Ireland, with 7 wins, then followed by Sweden with 6.
Well, and if you win it, you have to host it the next year, right? So Ireland point was like, people, we don't have the money to host it every year, so let's think about this.
But yeah, it's a big thing, and obviously technology has made it easier to tally the votes and to have this shown all over Europe. I mean, it used to be very very complicated to tally the votes, and I still remember, and I know they still do it, where they go on location in the different countries where they have a host and they talk about, you know, the song that the country put through, and they have a big usually a big event center where they have it, and it's a big party. So it's basically at the same time in all the participating countries, because there's really not much of a time difference across Europe. It's just a big party in every country around this contest celebrating music. And yeah, this year, for the first time ever since 1956, it's being canceled, which is kind of a big deal.
So every country has their own call-in, right? So people can call into their own country's, you know, system somehow. And then every country has a certain number of points, and they all have the same amount of points that they can distribute to the different songs. So of course, what in Germany everybody wants to hear is Germany 12 points. But that leads to these situations where Germany always gives a lot of points to the Turkish contestant, because Germany has such a strong Turkish immigration group. Or Austria famously always gives terrible or no points to Germany. And then the Eastern countries kind of support each other. The Baltic countries support each other. I mean, it's very cliquey and very political in a way. You can learn a lot of who gives point to whom, who gives points to whom. And it's not necessarily about musical quality. When I won for Germany in 2008 or something. Austria famously again didn't give any points, or just very, very few points, and was like the only country that didn't. So there is a lot of that going on too, which makes it fun though too, right? Because you can sit in front of your TV and like get really excited about it and what's happening this year, and yeah.
Yeah, so to Katrin's point, right, so each country gets to award a number of points to, you know, 12 or 18 and down. So each country gets the same number of votes, and you know, they pick their winner, and then they pick their second and third, and the number, and that's how many points get awarded. It also used to be that you can only sing in the language of your own country, and now you no longer have to. You can sing I think in English if you want to, with, you know, with most of them. But yeah, so if you were a German speaking country, your contribution had to be in English, had to be in German.
How times change. I actually remember that where there was a mandate to sing in your native language, and now that has changed. And I think since that change, predominantly English English songs won. Most winning songs, there it is. Most winning songs were performed in English.
Yep.
They won 22 times. French is also popular with 14 victories. Dutch and Hebrew songs won 3 times each, but that's data from, I think, 2012. So things have changed a little bit since then, but mostly still on the English side of things.
Yep, and you know, German, or not German, but pan-European tradition that has been around for a long, long time.
Traditions. We have traditional events. One of those being Café and Kuchen, and this one changes this time around. Is that right?
So so at the GAI, as most of you know, we've pretty much been closed, and we're kind of slowly dipping our toe into programs and events again for the summer. And upcoming, we have the GAI Lawn Cafe, and it's scheduled Sunday, July 19th from 1 to 3 p.m., where we're serving afternoon coffee and kuchen, which is something, again, very traditional, very common in Germany. And you can either, you know, come here, weather permitting and health and COVID guidelines permitting, and enjoy your coffee and kuchen here, or if necessary, you can come and pick them up. There's more information on our website, and due to the COVID restrictions, there are only limited spots available. So if you do want to participate again, make sure you contact us soon or check on the website and register soon. It is the GAI Lawn Cafe on Sunday, July 19th.
And if you know anything about our grounds at the GAI, just sitting out in the lawn with those massive trees, I think that in itself is quite a treat.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And we are also starting to have in-person classes again this summer. Again, small groups, no more than 6 students per class for the in-person classes. So the summer session starts next week, and then in successive weeks in July, with some in-person classes, some Deutsch at home online classes. And we're offering both conversation and grammar sessions. So if you feel that you want to practice your conversation, you want to practice more speaking, conversation is the class for you, online or in person. Or if you are one of these people who loves grammar or wants to practice some more grammar, join us for a grammar session. And all that information also is available on our website. And then there's still a few spots available for summer camp. In the beginning of the program, you heard Kaspar talking about the summer camps. So there's still a few spots, and camps are available in July and August. And all of these programs are, you know, following the current guidelines here in the state of Minnesota. And obviously, as things develop and as things change, we will always keep that in mind, that this is a very fluid situation. And with that, you know, the GAI is holding limited programs like the camps and language classes at the house. We now have limited staff here on site to answer the phones and run these on-site programs. But the majority of the staff is still working from home. So if you think you want to stop by, please make sure you give us a call first, because the house is not generally open to the public. If you want to stop by, call us, make an appointment, just to make sure that that we can keep all the guidelines in mind and keep everybody safe while we do have some limited programs and limited events.
Definitely a new situation for all of us. Going to be quite interesting to see how those classes unfold. I'm actually looking forward to starting ours next week and get some face-to-face time again with our German speakers.
Yep, we are looking forward to that. So Be rest assured that we are making sure we're cleaning things, we're keeping social distancing, we're opening windows while we have the air conditioner on to have airflow. So we're making sure we're keeping everybody safe.
All right. Well, Catherine, and in absence, Casper, thank you so much for being here again.
Well, pleasure as always.
Claudia, thank you so much for running us through the events and everything else.
Gern geschehen. My pleasure.
And yeah, we did spend quite some time on summer traditions. Of course, the door is always open for your questions. If you have any questions, culturally, language, grammar, which we will soon bring back on the table, of course, then please do email us at podcast@gai-mn.org. And once again, a massive shout out to Casper, our assistant teacher and summer kids camp warrior, for actually being with us today. That was quite enjoyable. We have to repeat that in the future. With that, we're signing off for today, and we'll hear you again soon. Bye-bye.
Cheers.